You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Pride to Detroit podcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. It's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. That's right. Righteous Felon Jerky and meat sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park. Each 2-ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein, and each stick has 8 grams of protein. Trust me, if it's good enough for the Lions, it's going to be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced all-natural Black Angus beef, and they pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offerings. Go to RighteousFelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout to get 15% off your order. That's promo code POD15 at RighteousFelon.com. And welcome to the Pride of Detroit PODcast, PrideofDetroit.com, Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook, live on twitch.tv/PrideofDetroit. You know where to find us. You know where to get us. We're all here. We're all assembled. We're all ready to keep kicking ass at a very long offseason of which we must endure, suffer, and slam through. I am Chris Perfett, the adequate host, at Chris Perfett on Twitter. I will be your guide into the world of madness, of audio and audio. There is a visual medium to Twitch, but this is primarily a podcast, hence why it's called a PODcast. And on today's PODcast, we're going to be talking about the latest news, including the question of whether or not we've been worried about Ben Johnson for the wrong reasons, and maybe Aaron Glenn might be the one to leave. We'll get to that news in a second. And of course, because the playoffs are going on, there's no better chance than to start navel gazing a little bit and keep asking the question, could the Lions have beaten any of these losers? And to help me do that, it's Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit Online. Hello, Jeremy.
How's it going, Chris?
It was going well right up until Twitch chat decided your green screen needed the Madden version of Mike McCarthy just hanging over your shoulder again.
Yes. One of the creepiest renderings of an NFL head coach in that game.
The small smile and the black eyes, lifeless eyes, like a doll's eyes.
It really, truly appropriate for today's funeral of the Dallas Cowboys.
But not Mike McCarthy. He's still going to be their coach, which is amazing. Ryan Matthews.
Black is the motherfucking rock guy.
At Ryan_POD. Ryan had some spicy takes about these playoffs that we were sharing on the pregame show. About just how this is all tuned through. Definitely not the wild card round.
Yeah, for sure. I have a question though. Like, what's up? If Mike McCarthy's sticking around, can Kellen Moore stick around? Did you guys see Steve Smith tweet at him?
Yes.
I did not see this. I have to go look this up, but.
Yeah. You wanted to describe it?
So essentially Steve Smith was like, hey, Carolina Panthers interviewed Kellen Moore. He better not be the next guy because that play was garbage.
Ezekiel Elliott under center.
It was the definition of blocker charge.
He got beat. Like, we'll get into that because I think that goes into our question of, could the Lions have beaten these teams? And, well, this isn't a Cowboys podcast. I know the Cowboys take over everything. I don't care about Mike McCarthy. I just love that they're probably going to hold on to him. People think, Jerry Jones is like this wheeling and dealing guy when he's just an old comatose man. But anyway, let's talk about a more lively team, the Detroit Lions, which is why we're all here. And we promised not to front load our BS. So we're going to go straight into the news and notes, which is what we're going to do every first segment. And the big news of the week is, in case you haven't caught it, me and Jeremy, we recorded a mini podcast last week when the news broke about Ben Johnson returning to the Detroit Lions, which was a hell of a party for us. And there was a lot of talk, and we'll get back into this because I want Ryan's comments on it as well. We'll get back into it. I think there's some questions about Ben Johnson in our mailbag we brought back. But Aaron Glenn still isn't committed to be back. And right now, Aaron Glenn is maybe interviewing with the Cardinals. You have in person probably next to these notes, Jeremy.
Yeah.
And I know he's on the Colts short list as well. So let's talk
not
about
short.
It.
First of all, I wouldn't call the Colts list short. They've interviewed
it's pretty over long, a dozen but people. It is a short list. It is, yes, a quote unquote short list by definition. Yes.
Yeah. So Aaron Glenn was scheduled to interview with the Cardinals this past Saturday. I have not seen any confirmation that the interview actually happened, which is why I put probably in our notes here. So there's no reason to believe it didn't happen, but a lot of times you'll either see the team post like, hey, we completed our interview, or you'd see an insider say that interview has happened. That hasn't been posted yet. And I think part of that is just the Cardinals are still kind of in the early goings of their coaching process, because remember they signed a GM, they hired a GM first. They made that sure that happened first, and so I don't really know where Aaron Glenn kind of fits in that category. If you look at some of the other guys that they're interested in or who they've interviewed, Broncos defensive coordinator Ahiro Evero, Cardinals defensive coordinator Vance Joseph, Cowboys defensive coordinator Dan Quinn, former Frank Reich is interviewed there, D'Amico Ryans, the 49ers defensive coordinator, Brian Flores, and Sean Payton. All those guys are confirmed people that they're interested in. So that's a list of 8 guys. But the in-person interview always feels like an extra step, right? Like, it feels like that's a little bit more intimate. That's a little bit more serious interest. That's the thing that Ben Johnson turned down with the Panthers that we were all afraid of. So I don't think this is a token interview. I don't think this is a let's just, you know, cast a wide net interview. I think there's legitimate interest there with the Cardinals, with the Colts.
Who knows?
I don't think so. Who knows? And I doubt it.
And the Cardinals aren't exactly a team, I feel like, who's going to be giving away a pick for Sean Payton. So, like, or however, whatever the Saints want for him. Like, I have to keep reminding people that Sean Payton isn't free to go where he pleases. Whereas someone like Aaron Glenn is.
Yeah, I think it's important too. Like, maybe we can just tie this conversation all together and talk about somebody that the Lions did lose, which was Dave Sears, their director of college scouting. He went to the Cardinals and he's an assistant GM. So, I mean, Jeremy, like, you're kind of just like connecting the dots, right? But is there a possibility that could possibly entice Aaron Glenn to head to Arizona? I think what's most enticing, though, I think you can maybe set the Dave Sears stuff aside, that it's like a total clean slate, like the new GM, new coach, there's an assistant GM, like they're real. And I don't know. That seems like the most alluring part of that job specifically.
Yeah, I do wonder what the Dave Sears thing impact, if it does impact things at all. You know, I do think the front office and the coaching staff are fairly separate departments. I don't know how often Dave Sears is bumping elbows with Aaron Glenn, but at the same time, this Lions kind of culture has always also been about collaboration, right? And working together. And so maybe they do know each other on a fairly, I wouldn't say intimate level, but like,
at the very least, if you know him enough to have like a working relationship, so like when you put your first foot down on the job, it's not with a complete stranger.
Right, for sure. And so would Dave Sears be a guy in the new Cardinals GM's ear and say, hey, I can vouch for this guy. I've seen him command a locker room. I've seen him do this. I've seen him do that. Maybe. But I think whatever influence, it's probably relatively minimal. And I think at this point, there's no sign of who's leading the clubhouse. And I think a lot of it might just depend on where this Sean Payton domino falls. And maybe that's the first thing that gets all these other jobs starting to fall, because we really haven't seen a ton of movement across the board in these 5 open jobs. And I don't know where Aaron Glenn stands right now.
as far as I can remember, this has been the longest since Black Monday where we've had this many jobs open, if I am not completely mistaken. Like, it's some of these jobs are just sitting there. I think part of that is just the quality of the jobs that are open. Like, I mean, we're Lions fans. I know, don't throw stones, glass houses, all that. But like from the people who I talk with nationally, these are not good jobs that are open in any capacity. I know, like, a lot of times the jobs you get in the NFL, they're open because they're bad. But like, these are bad on a level that we haven't really had for a minute. When the best you can say is Carolina, and even then, you know, some of the guys who I talk with nationally talk about, do you really want that job? You're going to have to deal with Tepper as like a meddling owner. So it's rough, but
I think maybe the main question here, and it's kind of interesting to see how the conversation has shifted from last year, but how concerned would you be about Aaron Glenn leaving? Because he was a guy that I mean, even after a bad first season in terms of their defensive performance, people were still very much on board with Aaron Glenn and didn't want to see him leave. I think that conversation has shifted a bit with now a second season where the defense hasn't been that good. To me, I still think it would be a big blow, but I don't know. Do you guys feel maybe a little bit less, you know, pressure on the Lions' shoulders to keep him around another year?
Do you want to take it first, Ryan? Because like, I was kind of leading this way, but
Ryan, you were the Aaron Glenn bandwagon leader from the get go.
I know, and I think it would be a big loss. I think maybe due in part to Ben Johnson really exploding this year. He was obviously the number one. Hey, this guy needs to be here, and you know it's fine if Aaron Glenn wants to go interview for head coaching jobs. But as soon as Ben Johnson says, "Yeah, I'm coming back," it seems like, okay, no, hold on. Aaron Glenn's important too. Like, yeah, I think you want to keep Aaron Glenn in the fold, because here's the thing I'll say about the Detroit Lions and their defense. Aaron Glenn's background is in the secondary and the defensive backs. And I think that's the area where the Detroit Lions need to improve the most. And I think you can account the Lions' deficiencies on defense really to their lack of ability on the outside at corner. And so when I think about keeping Aaron Glenn in house, like that, I think that's so important to me, because he did make his bread as a secondary coach in New Orleans, you know, bringing that team up to speed. And I think losing Aaron Glenn, regardless of the compensation you're going to get in return for losing him, that would be like a tough, because I mean, I don't know who jumps into that role immediately from Aaron Glenn. Like, who is the immediate successor? Does it seem like it's a little bit early for Kelvin Shepard? I mean,
you already let Aubrey Pleasant go this year too, so like, you already have to bring up another DB coach too.
Which, and that's the thing with I mean, Aubrey Pleasant was kind of viewed as being the successor. Do you know what I mean? Without even like Aaron Glenn even, you know, thinking about leaving Detroit, like we're all the way back to last offseason, we're talking about like, oh, contingency plans for the Detroit Lions, and Aubrey Pleasant was that guy. Well, like Chris said, now he's not here.
Yeah, I think there is a bit of a, if Glenn left, it would be a bit of a brain drain on the defense. You would probably have to go outside of house to find someone to replace him, which would be a problem, because you'd basically be starting from zero on that. And I know that Aaron Glenn's, the defense's performance was erratic this year. And we kept going, I kept watching fans go between that they thought the aggression on his defense was fine to just getting really mad and wanting him gone. Depending on what happened, obviously, with in the course of a game. But there was a lot of times where we talked about plenty of times, Jeremy, where the Lions would put up a lot of points, but the defense could not stop that bleeding. And then when that Carolina game happened, everyone wanted Glenn gone. Everyone wanted Glenn gone, because that was kind of seen as unconscionable that you let 500 yards from scrimmage being led by Sam Darnold. But you know me, I don't take one game as the complete whole of it. But I do think that from a fan perspective, losing him wouldn't be as big of a confidence blow. But I would say this for Glenn, is that Glenn, and we got a good sign of it from Hard Knocks as well. Like, he's an emotional leader as well. Especially when, and that defense more than offense in the NFL is predicated on firing yourself and just getting yourself into a war dance. And he and Aaron Glenn has so much fire. And when he runs his defense as aggressive as he does, like, you're not, I don't see that being that. That's hard to replace. And I don't know if the next defensive coordinator would really have that kind of fire to him.
They wouldn't right away, right? Because Aaron Glenn already has this built-in relationship with these players who absolutely respect the hell out of him. And that's important, right? And that's why he's getting these head coaching gigs, or these interviews at least, because he has an ability to connect with these players in ways that a lot of people who have not played this game can. But I do think there's an underrated aspect, especially here in Detroit, for his ability to game plan. I really do. Because I think the first year and a half, he was searching and searching and searching for the identity of this defense, for a scheme that worked for these players. And considering they're all young, considering those guys were just kind of figuring out who they are in the NFL, it took some time. But there was a pretty dramatic shift that happened midway through last season where the Lions kind of figured out finally how things work. They kind of figured out how the puzzle pieces went into place. And we said it a couple times on the podcast all year. Even from last year to this year, there were only two starters that carried over. If you take out Tracy Walker from the equation. So that's a lot of shuffling of the puzzle pieces. That's you finish a puzzle at the end of 2021 and someone comes and knocks it off your table and you have to redo it, the whole thing. And so it's taken time, but here's the thing. Now you have those young defensive players coming back. You have your foundational pieces on defense. You know how it's going to fit together. And so to lose Aaron Glenn when the pieces are finally glued to the table, I think that's going to be a pretty significant loss if it happens. And at this point, I'm not at DEFCON 2 like I was with Ben Johnson, but it's not something.
It's a hurdle. It is
ignore. And there are the compensatory picks. I get it. You get back to back third round picks if Aaron Glenn goes, and maybe that's why people are a little bit more okay with it this year than they were last year when they wouldn't have gotten those compensatory picks. But I think Ryan brings up the great point. There does not seem to be a contingency plan in place right now. Like maybe you do Todd Wash. He has defensive coordinator experience at least, but I don't think you want that to be your long-term goal. I think you like Todd Wash in the role that he currently is, and you'd like to find someone else. So they might have to reach out, you know, to a different team, to a different an exterior hire. And there are a lot of teams looking for coordinators right now too. So that brings in a lot of competition.
I want to just put a bow on this by asking a question that maybe none of us answered, but like, look around in the NFL, who has been asked to do more with less as far as Aaron Glenn and that defense? Because in his first year, he loses Okuda and he loses Romeo Okwara. And you could have made the argument going into that season that those were the top two players on that defense. And he's dealing with Patricia retreads. Remember Jamie Collins? He was here for like a hot minute still. And I'm just saying that, like, I think that there he's Penasini doing a lot with a little. He's doing honestly, a lot with a little.
Penasini retiring kind of threw a thing into the mix right away. And I know they got Isaiah Bugs eventually, but they had to kind of like fast track him and figure out where he fits into everything too. And that was a key part of the run defense.
The second round pick that you take with Levi, he's not playing. I mean.
Yeah. I think real quick, just real quick, because we got to go on to the other news. The other part about losing Dave Sears, which you mentioned, like that is your college scouting director. Which I look, the Lions hit it out of the park with the last draft. So I no surprise at all that he got poached. I am curious if that scouting continues to hold true without Dave Sears. I think it probably does, but it's fascinating where we're talking here now. Three podcasts really straight of Lions people are getting poached. It's new for a lot of us, and I think that's why we're all kind of panicky. But what's not being poached, but is also kind of really cool news, Sean Dion Hamilton is going to be coaching Senior Bowl DB. So I think it's really cool news for Sean. You have here, I just want to read this note Jeremy has here, because I have no clue what it means other than Jeremy just wrote here, Devon Witherspoon, more like Witherswoon. So I have to turn this over to Jeremy to explain all of this.
Well, first of all, I think it's cool that the Senior Bowl, like even last year, the Senior Bowl was playing around with their coaching staff, right? It was the two teams who had the coaching staffs of each team. And you're not allowed to have your head coach be the head coach. You have to have someone be the head coach. Basically, you're giving everyone raises. This year, they're doing a little bit different where it's just like, hey, do you have a coach you want to develop and you're in the NFL? tell me who it is, and maybe we'll get him on the Senior Bowl roster. Doesn't matter what team you're on. And so the Lions, Sean Dion Hamilton, who, if you may remember, at this point last year, was on the Lions roster trying to win a roster spot. And then when he got cut before the big cutdowns at the end of training camp, they're like, hey, you want to stick around and just be a coach? And he's like, yeah, sure. And so, like, again, this is showing the forethought, I think, of this coaching staff of getting those succession plans into place. And so now it's a really cool opportunity for Sean Dion Hamilton to already kind of strengthen his new career here in the NFL. And it'll be an adjustment for him to coach defensive backs when he's a linebacker and a linebacker's coach. But hey, guess what the Lions' biggest need is, Ryan? Defensive back. And now the Lions are going to have a nice close up
look. A coach at the Senior Bowl for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing we don't know yet is what team he'll be coaching for. And we don't exactly know the full rosters of each team yet. So as much as I like to joke about Devon Witherspoon, who for some reason, like, really hit everyone's radar last week, a corner out of Illinois, who's small, but fast and feisty. If the Lions get enough close look at him and some of the other guys that could be at the top of that draft class at cornerback, it's a pretty big win for them, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, a small, feisty cornerback sounds like somebody I know that coaches the Detroit Lions defense.
right.
Sorry, projecting here. I like it. I do like it. Yeah, so someone in chat saying Witherspoon has adequate size. Now I'm on board. Now I'm completely on board. I think it's a little ways from the draft, though. So Senior Bowl's fascinating because we'll keep an eye on that. We'll report from the Senior Bowl, but we like to slowly edge in to the draft.
It's only 2 weeks away, shockingly.
The Senior Bowl, you mean? Yes. Yeah. No, I know. It's kind of slotted in nicely. Well, 2 weeks away means that, like, we've got that conference championships and that dead week where it's like Senior Bowl and Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Yay. And then Super Bowl and then nothing. You've made me really depressed.
And the Senior Bowl, the actual game, like, means nothing, right? It's just about the practices leading up to it. So, yeah.
True.
Yep. But speaking of playoffs, I think we want to do a little bit of a mental exercise. It's something that I think I've seen across a lot of Lions fans asking this, and I think we've been asking it ourselves, watching these playoffs come unglued in a few places. If the Lions had made these playoffs, how well would they have done against this current cohort of playoff teams? So we're going to go through it all. We're going to give our hot takes. We're going to base this on absolutely nothing except our own Kool-Aid. We're going to have fun with it. And coming up a little bit later, the mailbag is back, which means Ryan has his favorite role back. Yay. He's just giving me a blank stare. Thumbs up. He gave me a thumbs up. So we'll be right back in the Pride of Detroit PODcast. But first, we got to tell you about Righteous Felon. You know what I like about Righteous Felon?
What's that?
It's meat.
It soothes your throat?
I would hope it soothes my throat. For those of you who don't know, as they can hear me gawking like this, I am coming off like RSV/flu, whatever this thing is that's been going around. If you would believe me, I'm actually like better this week. This is like right now is like the best I've been. But let's talk a little bit more about Righteous Felon through my coughing, which I will not edit out of this podcast. Now I'm editing it twice out of the podcast, but not out of this one. So Righteous Felon craft jerky and meat sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen's Park. That's right. Righteous Felon it fuels your Detroit Lions. So you can eat the meat that the Lions eat. Each 2 ounce bag of protein. How many grams of protein, Jeremy? Pop quiz.
I don't know, but I thought of something that I don't want to say out loud.
16 to 20. 16 to 20. You fail the test. Ryan Matthews, our teacher. How much is in each how many grams of protein in each meat stick?
I'm going to say 20.
8.
That's going not enough. They need to up those rookie numbers.
That's why you eat 2 meat sticks. You just go, you get more.
Fist.
Yeah. They're the adult Slim Jims. They're great. If it's good enough for the Lions, it's going to be good enough for you. So they're based in Westchester, Pennsylvania. They use locally sourced all-natural Black Angus beef and pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond stereotypical offerings. So yes, you could get the habanero, which is fantastic. The habanero Escobar is probably one of my favorites, but they also have truffle flavor. They also have turkey jerky. They also have beer infused. Isn't that what we're doing these days? We're infusing everything with beer.
It's Why good. Wouldn't we?
And guess what? We've got a promo code for you too. EOD15. Gets you 15% off your meat stack. Some people have those mind stacks or whatever the stacks is for those mental drugs. We got you a meat stack. Get your meat stack together. Save 15% on it with POD15 at righteousfelon.com. We'll be right back on the Pride Detroit POD cast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Pride Detroit POD cast. Back at it again at the Krispy Kreme. I could really use some Krispy Kreme right now, actually. I made myself really hungry. Speaking of, you know why I'm hungry is because I was not satisfied from these playoffs over the weekend.
Yeah.
This divisional round was not great, Jeremy.
I was really excited for really all of the games, and I don't know if there was a single one that really lived up to expectation. I think San Francisco-Dallas was probably the good one to end on. It was fine, but
it was competitive, but not in a very good way. Neither of those two teams, I thought, played particularly good football. Like, maybe it was more of a defensive game. Micah Parsons was being shot out of a cannon repeatedly, but I thought the only game that really endeared me was the Eagles game, and that's just because the Eagles did exactly which is what I wanted the Eagles to do, which was to put the face plant on the New York Giants.
For sure.
Other than that, I wasn't even, I don't know, Ryan, like I didn't read it. Well, we're leaving the AFC alone because it's not part of our topic, but you know, Bills and Bengals was fine, I guess.
I thoroughly enjoyed that game, and I thought it was just the most interesting and fascinating game of the week because of the spread. Like, I thought the Jacksonville Kansas City game was competitive, right? Like, I mean, it was back and forth. It was close.
Part of that was that, you know, Patrick Mahomes was playing on one leg.
For sure, right? So that definitely knocked it down a peg. I actually thought the Cincinnati game was just really entertaining for the fact, like I said, you had a team that was the underdog. It got all the way up to +6, and I don't understand why that number got to that point other than people thinking the conspiracy theory was going to be true. That the NFL wanted the neutral site AFC championship game so bad that they stuffed it with a referee and this and that and the other thing. And what does Joe Burrow go and do?
What's he do?
Goes out, beats the Bills, and then his first quote, like when he gets off the field, is like, they got to refund some money. Get those refunds. Like,
I love him. I love how he's committed to the Stogies now, too. He's like, I'm going to smoke him after every time we do this, guys. I'm going to do it. Be ready. But leaving the AFC alone and getting back to the NFC, the reason why we bring up these playoffs in particular is now we've watched a lot of these NFC games. And to Jeremy's point about some of these NFC games, they weren't great over the weekend, which is once again led us back to the well-watered well. Wow, I'm a wordsmith. That I think a lot of fans are asking, could the Lions have been, like, if the Lions had made the playoffs, they could have beaten most of the teams that lost over the weekend. And we're talking about Cowboys, Giants, Buccaneers, Seahawks, Vikings. Now, granted, I don't think a lot of this would apply. I mean, if we were being realistic about this, the Lions would have slotted in as the 7th seed, which meant they would have been paired up against the San Francisco 49ers.
Yep.
And I've had arguments with fans and other people in media back and forth for a couple weeks now because the Seahawks were competitive for a half against the San Francisco 49ers before the 49ers promptly put them in the ground. And a lot of people said, well, we would have had a better offense than the Seahawks had. And I said, sure, granted, I don't know what they would have done defensively against the 49ers. Brock Purdy, I thought, played better in that Seahawks game, but then it came up again because the Seahawks didn't play particularly well against the Cowboys. So are we overestimating it a little bit, or like after watching these playoffs, are you getting the same sense, Jeremy, that the more you watch the NFC, it's like, yeah, the Lions, if they made it, they could have beaten this team, or they could have beat that team. They could have done this, that, the other thing.
I mean, if they were the seventh seed, I think they would have gotten bounced in the first round. But I think the overall point, though, is a lot of people went into these playoffs even thinking this, where they're like, the Lions are probably right now the fourth or fifth best team in the NFC. And yeah. I think that is proving to be true, because the Giants may have beat up on the Vikings, but the Lions beat up on the Vikings. And then the Giants faced a real team and got their butts kicked. They got their teeth kicked in. And that's against an Eagles team that Lions are pretty competitive. I know that was all the way back in week one, and both teams are very different at this point in the season. I'd say both are probably even better than they were in week one. So I don't know how the Lions would match up against the Eagles. I don't think they would beat the Eagles, especially in Philly. But I think these playoffs more or less proved that they're probably better. They were, at least by the end of the season, they were better than the Vikings, which we knew because they beat the Vikings. They were better than the Giants, which we knew because they beat the Giants. They were better than the Seahawks, which we didn't officially know, but we had a pretty good feeling given the trajectory of both teams headed. And then you're left with maybe the Cowboys. Are they better than the Dallas Cowboys? And that is one where I'm not quite ready to cross yet. I know we're all laughing at them today, and rightfully so, because I do think that was a very talented roster that had a very good opportunity. And I think they gave it to the 49ers for a lot of that football game, but then Dak let them down. And the question is, are the Lions a team that could have exposed a bad Dak Prescott, or would they have just gotten run over by the Cowboys offense? Because the further and further we get away from the Lions regular season, I feel like there's a little bit of whitewashing happening with how bad the defense was. And yes, it was better towards the end of the season, but it wasn't yet good. And so their offense would have been good and competitive, but also that's a really good pass rush. And how would Jared Goff and the Lions offense do against good pass rush? I don't know. So all to say is, I think Philly's a better team than the Lions. I think San Francisco's probably a better team than the Lions. I think like we're talking like that, like that's the end of the list there, where it's just like, okay, now we're talking about a group of teams that are the Cowboys, the Lions, maybe the Giants. And that, like that, for the second tier in the NFL, and that's where we're headed going into 2023.
Well, that's where the Lions are going into 2023, and we're not even talking about an offseason full of additions.
Sure.
And I know that will include some subtractions as well, but I think about this too. Like the Lions lost pretty decisively to the Dallas Cowboys earlier this season, but totally different football teams. Night and day football teams. I mean, the Lions are without Amon-Ra for almost the entire game. There's no DJ Shark. There's no Jameson Williams. You know what I mean? Like at that point, and there's no DeAndre Swift in that game either. Like, I don't know. Like
they were prepared to take the lead in that game in the fourth quarter before Jamal Williams fumbled at the 1 yard line.
I know. So yeah, there's plenty to be said about that. I think decidedly you can say that head and shoulders above, like you said, the Giants and the Vikings. Seahawks, debatable, just because they seemed like they were a team that was kind of uneven too in their performances. But
sure,
you didn't know which team was going to show up at any given time. So I do think they would have had a shot at the Cowboys, though. I really do. Like, their propensity to create turnovers and to take care of the football, that's what made them such a dangerous team down the stretch. And yeah,
I do think they would have absolutely exploited the Cowboys by defeating their offense. I'm just curious how the Lions offense would have dealt with a threat like Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
Like and some of their own defense. It would have probably been a low scoring game at the end of the day. And like, look, I think there's credit to Jared Goff and that in the offense on how well they protected the ball down the stretch too. I think they would have game planned around just avoiding the pass rush, just getting the ball out quickly to just avoid that. So I think it's, and yeah, after watching what happened the weekend, I can guarantee tell you that Dan Campbell absolutely would have outcoached Mike McCarthy in that game.
Sure.
100% would have outcoached Mike McCarthy.
Yeah. I can't say 49ers though. The 49ers have way too many weapons on offense. Like
yeah, every time
they're showing you that having Mr. Irrelevant at quarterback doesn't matter in Kyle Shanahan's offense.
They are like, the one team that I can think of in the modern era that like they just don't need a quarterback.
And they traded up to get one, which is the most wild thing.
Yeah,
it's almost like quarterback is what's the word, irrelevant in their offense.
Okay,
all right, cool. You guys want to talk about anything else?
Here's one topic I want to bring up, because if the Lions are in this kind of second tier of NFC teams behind the Eagles, behind the 49ers, and maybe that's it, if they're in that second tier with the Cowboys, with the Lions, with the Seahawks, whatever NFC North, NFC South team you want to throw in there, maybe the Vikings, maybe the Packers, how can they jump into the one tier in one more offseason? Like, will it just take this offseason for them to potentially be in that conversation already?
I'm worried we're a little bit fast tracking it, but I know at the same time, Jeremy, our expectations here has been not just making the playoffs next year. It's been the division crown for the NFC North. Which I don't know, man. That sounds great in theory on paper, but we've always seen that when the rubber hits the road, there's always something that hiccups it and makes it kind of derail a little bit. But to your point, and I think Ryan can speak on this, I did see the early 2024 Super Bowl odds, and right now the Lions stand at plus 3,500, which is tied for 10th best right now. And again, Vegas numbers are Vegas numbers, but that indicates kind of where people are buying in on it. So Ryan,
are you asking me if the Lions are a top 10 football team heading into next season?
I kind of am. Is that the public perception before we've even done a draft or free agency or anything else? Is that the perception that the Lions are going to be top? Well, if we're talking playoffs next year, we're talking higher than top 10. We're talking top 7.
There's really something in me that wants to tell people, if you do want to bet on the Lions winning the Super Bowl, you should do it now.
See, I'm an idiot.
You should do it now before that number gets worse for you, the gambler.
Are you offended that the Packers are higher? Because
Yeah, that's outrageous.
That is kind of outrageous. It's not much better, but
yeah, no, I mean, I do want to say that heading into next season, I think the Lions will. I'm not going to teeter totter. Heading into next season, the Detroit Lions will be a top 10 football team. They might be 10, but they're going to be a top 10 football team.
What rank them in the NFC?
They're behind the 49ers. They're behind the Eagles.
Three seed. Got it. Cool. Three seed in the playoffs. Book your home playoff tickets right now.
It seems out of control. Seems out of control.
It doesn't to me, because here's the thing. It's not often there were three teams that went worse to first this year. The Jaguars, the Giants, and I'm sorry, worse to playoffs, I should say. So it was the Giants, it was the Seahawks, and it was the Jaguars. I think you essentially throw the Lions in that same bucket. They didn't technically make the playoffs, but they came pretty darn close. And so it's not you don't really go worst to competitor in one offseason. It very rarely happens. It happened with the Bengals. That's about it. I think last year was that step to worst to decent team, playoff competitor. I think making a jump from playoff competitor to actual competitor, it's a tougher jump, but it happens in one offseason. It can very much happen in one offseason. I'm not saying it will. I think, Chris, you're right. Like we all lay out kind of a golden path for the offseason, say, wow, like, look what they have ahead of them. Everything's going to be great.
Well, it's also that it works. I think the other thing is that we are assuming downward trajectory for almost all these teams and upward trajectory for the Lions. One thing to say upward trajectory for the Lions, which is true, but there's just this assumption that, like, yes, the Vikings will get much worse. Right. Or like they are worse and they will continue to get worse, that the Cowboys will continue to get worse. There's just the assumption that everyone will suck more and we will be more awesome.
Right.
And maybe part of that is true, but I also think there's going to be some other teams that are going to jump into that conversation as well. Like the Giants are going to keep getting the Giants Agreed. Are one of those teams that is going to be on an upward trajectory.
Agreed. Yeah. I think that's a very important point to point out. And I think there, like you said, there are some legitimate reasons to believe the Lions are headed in the right direction. While, you know, some teams are going to be in some cap trouble and some people are going to have some difficult decisions with certain players and bring them back, and the Lions relatively healthy in their cap situation. But I think the biggest thing working in the Lions' favor is what we talked about at the top, which is like they have this extremely young core of players on both sides of the ball, which, I mean, you hope this isn't always how it works out, but you hope your young players continue to get better. And it can go either way, right? Trajectory is not always on an upward path. Young players don't always get better. Sometimes they get worse and fall out of the league. But when you have a young core and more young investments to make in you know, four picks in the first two rounds, then you're like, okay, well, this team should get better. It has the resources to get better. And the young players that they do have are sticking around. There's not going to be a ton of roster turnover. There's going to be more additions than there are going to be subtractions. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, it would make logical sense for me to take a Lions team, which I think we can all agree was probably in the, I don't know, 12 to 16 range, probably at the end of the season, both by record and by DVOA and by whatever you want to throw out there, to make a jump from 12 to 16 to top 10. That is not crazy to say. Again, that's a tougher jump. It's always a tougher jump to be in that huge group of mediocre teams to an elite team. But given the Lions' resources, given the age of their roster, given the trajectory of how they were playing at the end of the season, yeah, this team should be a top 10 team next season. Should. Absolutely.
You really don't have to look any further than the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals go 4-11 and 1. And then the next season they're in the Super Bowl. And
they had a second year before that too, though. That there was like it was 3 years for the Bengals.
Yeah, but but the Joe Burrow season got cut short.
Right.
His rookie season got cut short. And so the thing with the Bengals, and I know it's Burrow, but like you see, like it happens in a hurry. And because that team that went to the Super Bowl was only 10-7. Like they went into Tennessee and they beat the number one team. And then they went and beat the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. Like I just think that like for the Lions, like I think people kind of, like, here's the thing. I don't think the Lions were capable of knocking off the Eagles or the 49ers. So like I don't think that if they would have snuck in the playoffs this year that they would have been ready for that level of success immediately, kind of like the Bengals did. But you're talking about going from being that 9-8 team, like you said, Jeremy, to going to being a team in the mix, a competitor without being in the playoffs. It's a crazy jump to assume, but they have so many resources where they don't have to count on all those guys necessarily to take another big leap. Like they could be drafting guys. They could be drafting guys that come in and make a big difference. Let's drink the Kool-Aid right now while we still can.
Yeah, well, we still can.
We're still kind of basking.
We got 7 months of Kool-Aid drinking to go.
I think all we've done is drink Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Be excited about your football team. It's headed in the right direction.
You know what direction we're heading in? We're bringing back the mailbag, baby. It's not enough to just have one mailbag podcast where people have apparently been saying, oh, Jeremy and Eric, they only take like 5 questions. So we're going to add more of that. Because I think Ryan wants some questions. And I think it's a great point in this next segment, too, on like we should also get Ryan's thoughts on some of the stuff that Jeremy and I have talked about with Ben Johnson. I think we've got a question to do that. So we'll take a quick break, come back with the mailbag. It's mail time, and Ryan has his title back.
Sackmaster General?
Ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mail time. Hashtag ask POD. Send us all your questions. But please understand right now, especially since it's still January, the last thing on our brain is draft and free agency, especially when it comes to specific defensive names. Asking what I think about them on, or where they go, or what I should feel about the Lions trying to sign them is not a place. I don't think we've ever been, Jeremy. We've never been there. Like we said, you say we'll get there, but that's never something we've ever done.
Yeah, I know. But at some point, we have to at least dip our toe in that. And I understand, like, what else are we going to talk about? Like, there's nothing between now and then. But there is a bunch of time. And I think we just haven't really prepared our mind and our bodies yet for free agency and draft talk, considering those are 2 and 3 months away.
Do you guys kind of blame Ben Johnson for the reason why we have to figure out stuff to talk about? I think it's kind of his fault.
It's funny enough you say that, because I think that's your first question in the mail sack, Ryan.
Oh, okay.
You don't have it open. Shall I?
No. I was just being adequate. It's fine. Okay. So from Aaron17 on Twitter, he asks, we're all glad that Johnson is coming back, but does it create any concerns about the long-term viability of the rebuild if just the possibility of losing a coordinator causes that much concern?
Now, I wanted to do this first because, Ryan, I think, like, Jeremy and I, we jumped on emergency stream when Ben Johnson came back. But this is something I think Jeremy and I talked about, because we were talking about, you know, an extra year of Ben Johnson gives the Lions more time to, you know, start to build that contingency towards having someone coming up who can eventually be the successor for Ben Johnson. But, you know, it was something I think we discussed a little bit, Jeremy, about this idea of, you know, it's a concern putting this much into a coordinator, this much confidence around a team about whether or not that coordinator remains with Detroit. So, Ryan, just I guess I'm kind of kicking it to you for this question, but also just overall thoughts on, you know, kind of the plan moving forward, because Ben Johnson's going to be on coaching radars again next year, too.
Yeah, I don't think I would feel comfortable saying the Detroit Lions are a top 10 football team had Ben Johnson left. I don't. And I think I say that pretty plainly because we just saw the Lions do something offensively that they hadn't done in their franchise's history. Not Matthew Stafford, not Calvin Johnson, not Barry Sanders. None of those guys. And the Detroit Lions had an offensive season where they were absolutely dynamite and they were still shorthanded. They were shorthanded with DeAndre Swift injuries. They didn't get Jameson Williams. They missed time with DJ Shark. Like, The Lions were still hamstrung and they still figured out ways to get it done. And I think a lot of that credit belongs to Ben Johnson. And that doesn't mean, though, that when Ben Johnson leaves, that window immediately slams shut. I needed to see another season for me to have belief like, okay, like if the Lions can do this twice, I know Ben Johnson will have a lot to do with it. But if the Lions can start to stack these seasons and they can sustain the success and they have their offensive line intact, like, let it rip. Then I think that the Lions can have sustained, you know, excellence at that side of the ball.
Yeah. And the one thing that we mentioned last week, Chris, and I think it begs repeating, is Dan Campbell has had his hand in this the entire time, right? He had his hand in it when they demoted Anthony Lynn. He had his hand in it, I'm sure, a bunch this offseason when transitioning full time to Ben Johnson.
Right before about whether or not he'd even still be calling plays or he trusted Ben Johnson to call plays.
Right. Yeah.
Like that was a decision he was making.
Sure. I think he probably knew all along that Ben Johnson was going to call the plays and he was playing the media a little bit. But yeah, like, that was always part of the consideration because he's always been kind of intimately involved in all that sort of stuff. So if Ben Johnson eventually leaves the picture, I trust Dan Campbell, not necessarily to take the reins of the offense, but at least find someone that he knows, someone within the staff, or, you know, if he does an internal promotion, to oversee that kind of transition, because he knows what he wants. He is kind of he has that aggressive mindset that I think a lot of people are attributing to Ben Johnson. I think the backbone is really Dan Campbell. And the other thing I wanted to say about this is it was news that came down late last week that we didn't talk about on the podcast. Lions sweetened the pot, right? They gave him a big promotion. And mm-hmm. So I think maybe I want to talk a little bit about that and what that tells you guys about the Lions' seriousness, Ben Johnson's commitment to coming back, and maybe, just maybe, a sign that ownership, you can't say that they won't, you know, put a little moolah behind this franchise.
Well, I think that goes back to what Dan was saying about Sheila after the final game. We saw the locker room celebration after the Packers game, and he handed an extra game ball to Sheila Hamp, who was in there in the locker room, and he said straight up, it's like, this year, whatever we needed, ownership got us. Like, you know, Sheila would come to us and be like, what do you need? I'll get it for you.
Yeah.
And to me, the idea that they sweeten the pot to keep Ben Johnson, that just reaffirms it. What do you need? We need to keep our hotshot offensive coordinator from getting poached and keep us from growing in year three. What's going to help you with that? Kickback. And Sheila did it.
I mean, just this offseason too, the other sweetening of the pot for really the entire franchise of getting them what they need, changing the turf this month too. A lot of Lions players were pissed off about the turf that they had in Ford Field. So two big scores for Sheila Hamp this month.
And I was going to say, the other thing too is, did you guys see the headline and the quote from Anthony Lynn where he was talking about like the resources in San Francisco, like they're an organization that will do whatever it takes. He didn't go back to the Lions to take a dig. He like went back to the Chargers to take a dig. So it's like, clearly, I mean, the last place you were in was Detroit. I mean, that might be the most freshest in your mind, but he was.
And
like,
he certainly wouldn't be alone of former people taking digs at the Lions. That is sure. Well-oiled ground.
Yeah. So kudos to Lions ownership.
When was the last time we get to say that without people just shitting on us for talking about the Fords in a positive manner?
Oh, God.
All right. Next question. You got Ryan.
Oh, I'm still asking questions. I'm asking all the questions. I forgot how I did this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was round robin. Whatever. Okay. So at GVLaker25 on Twitter, he asks, over under for Lions primetime games next season. Pretend the Vegas line is 4. So no hook. And this does not include Thanksgiving.
I think that's high. I think that's really high.
That's very high.
Can we reset the line at something maybe a little more real?
So I'm curious about this because Jeremy and I were talking. I think it would be 1.5 or 2. And Jeremy thought it was going to be 2.5 or 2.5. So where do you fall, Ryan?
Yeah, this funny enough, Jeremy, this reminded me of like somebody when they asked us a question about how many pick sixes Jeff Okuda would have in a season. And they set the over under at like 2.5. And I was like, dude, hold on. Those rarely happen.
He got one.
He did get one to his credit. And I think we were like, we would set the total at 1.5 and we'd take the under. So we're idiots. But I would probably set this at 1.5.
Okay.
If you're not counting Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think the Thanksgiving thing is a big thing. And like as big as a story the Lions has been, we've seen enough to know that when the networks come in and declare their primetime games, they're going for the big brands these days. It doesn't matter how bad the Cowboys or the Packers might be, that's what's going to load up Sunday night football, Monday night football, Thursday night with Amazon. They're going to want, like, they all went to the Broncos until they couldn't, because the Broncos are a massive fan base. And as big as the Lions are and how much good press they got them, that probably puts them in like a tier with, I don't know, I'd have to see their schedule for next week if they have a matchup with one of those big teams, Ryan, but I think I would go 1.5 and I'd go over. I think they'll get 2. I think we'll get a Monday night. And well, the other problem too is that they don't get Thursday night games. Lions don't get are never scheduled on Thursday night because of Thanksgiving. So that takes them out of the running for one of them. But I think they'll get a Monday night and a Sunday night.
The only other thing I want to say is, like, you have to take Germany off the table too, in case that happens, because that would be like around the same time as a London game.
Should we revisit that? We were talking about that during a break, Jeremy, about like the idea of the Lions playing an international game seems kind of high.
Yeah. The Chiefs are the only possibility of the teams, because they did announce the international host teams this year, all five of them. And the Chiefs are the only team the Lions play this year. And, you know, I did a little research, and the Lions are the team that the Chiefs are playing that has not been to an international game in the longest time. I think it's been 7 years. It's 2015, 8 years. So it's been a while. The Lions are due. I think Lions versus Chiefs would be a fascinating game. But if we're talking primetime and we're not counting that, even though that'd be a nationally televised game, I think the minimum is two. I think it's either two or three. Because I think the Lions have earned that. I think they're a fun team. I can't tell you how many times this year non-Lions fans on Twitter are saying, wow, Lions are a really fun team right now. Even when they were 1-7, remember? That offense was crazy. And people are like, the Lions are super fun. Like, everyone predicted they were going to turn it around, and then they did. And so now they're playing at a good level. They've got an enthusiastic head coach. They've got a good storyline. They've got an underdog feel to them. I think that pulls nationally. I really do. And so I think they get two. So I would take the over on the 1.5. 2.5 to me is a trickier line. The thing working in their favor, actually both working in their favor and not working in their favor, is their away schedule is great. They've got a lot of really intriguing matchups, including the Chiefs game, Chargers, Bucks, Cowboys, Ravens, all decently good teams, at least how they finished in 2022. Unfortunately, their home schedule. So if you're looking for like a home primetime game, your non-conference games are Falcons, Panthers, Broncos, Raiders, Seahawks. Rough.
Yeah, you might get Broncos. I don't know. That depends when.
I think the NFL learned their lesson with the Broncos this year. I think they're coming into 2023 highly skeptical of putting them on
the Broncos primetime. Will get at least one primetime, though. They'll get at least one primetime.
I say go Lions Packers. Lions Packers primetime in Detroit. We've had a couple primetime games in Lambeau. Bring it into Detroit this year.
I was going to say, I think with the success like that Lions Packers game was incredibly well watched.
Yeah.
In spite of everyone being like, oh, why they put him in primetime? The Lions, you know, the Lions don't have anything to play for because the Rams lost. That was incredibly well watched. I think you're right. I think the schedule makers have learned the lesson is like, hey, Packers Lions sells probably about as well as like Bears Packers.
Tinfoil hat theory. The Ooh. Detroit Lions are going to play in Germany because that was one of the concessions that they made in order to host the draft in 2024.
Wee-oo, wee-oo. That and Hard Knocks?
Yeah.
Package deal.
Mm. I like it.
Just thinking. All right. Next question. I know I handle these now. So, okay.
That's right. All right. You are the captain now.
At BTW the numbers on Twitter, they ask, are we being fooled that the Detroit Lions don't put a lot of value in tight end? They continue to say, I wonder if the Hock trade was about fit / contract / quote unquote their guy rather than true perspective on the position. The quote unquote tight end by committee produced tight end or touchdowns, but I wonder if the fall on the running game was related.
It's an interesting thought, and I think part of this dates back to our mailbag podcast last week, where Eric and I both declared that tight end might be literally the lowest on this regime's positional need pyramid, which I stand by. But there's definitely truth to what he said about Hockenson, right? I think the Lions just were not prepared to pay him the kind of contract that he's going to get either in Minnesota or wherever he goes next. I don't know, though. I don't know if this team thinks they need a tight end weapon.
I think the ultimate equalizer in that regard is that they have good pass catching running back in Swift, and they've got a slot guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown. I know neither of those are tight ends, but those are kind of, and Amon-Ra St. Brown does a lot of blocking for you as well. So I feel like those are roles that you're looking for in a tight end, usually. especially now in the modern day. And it's something I think they like to have. But to that point, I feel like those roles are being already handled very well by other members of the offense skill groups.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I don't know if the running back by committee will work for another year, but I think it boils down to the question is, are you going to spend a top draft position or high free agency money to fulfill that hole? It's hard to find a top 10 tight end out there. So I don't know if they want to keep going back to that well without a clear candidate in mind.
I think it's tough to parse exactly how good Lions tight end crew was this past year, because you look at tight end numbers, touchdown numbers, and I feel like that's not a great way to evaluate how these players were playing. I think a lot of reason that the touchdown numbers were high were play design, right? Is you're not expecting a lot out of Brock Wright and Shane Zylstra until you sneak those guys out and they're wide open. And so do you really give credit to the tight ends for doing that? I mean, maybe, but not a ton. And in terms of run blocking and pass blocking, they were just kind of so-so. I don't think they were great. I don't think they were horrible. And so the question is, are the Lions okay with that? Are they okay with just kind of getting by at tight end? Or was the reason why they were that way this year just because they didn't have the resources and they thought getting anything for TJ Hockenson instead of nothing was worth it? And so, I mean, would this offense be better with a bigger tight end threat? Sure. And maybe they're hoping we can't like overlook James Mitchell as a potential option to be a tight end one in this offense. Didn't do much his rookie season, but didn't have a ton of playing time working back from that ACL. So if the basis of this question is kind of subvertively asking, will this team draft a tight end in day one or day two? I mean, maybe, but I still think it's probably pretty low on the totem pole in terms of things that need to get fixed.
I'm not aware of this class being a very good tight end class other than like the Notre Dame kid Mayer.
I don't know.
I've seen the history.
I think I saw Brugler say he thought it was deep this year. But I don't know.
I'm an idiot.
The point, though, I think that's most salient is that the run game was not good in the second half of the season, and that's not going to sit well with this regime. And so I don't know if that's okay. Let's just get right guard shored up. Let's bring in a tight end that is a devastating blocker, or maybe we got to switch things up with our scheme. But I think that is the biggest argument to maybe getting an upgrade at tight end is to help out that running game that was not very productive down the stretch.
Yeah. When you look at the Lions offense though, I think Jeremy, the one quote that has always stuck with me is that quote about the front door of the offense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that is the tight end that they need that could really unlock something. And I view that guy right now as being who Kabinda is. And I hate to say it, but like if the Lions could upgrade from Kabinda, then I think that would change what they can do as far as having that tight end. Because really, if you have a super athletic tight end, like look at what the 49ers do with Juszczyk, right? I mean, mm-hmm. if the Lions, but how much of that is a luxury, right?
Right.
Like how much of that is a luxury thing? Like the Lions can get by with Kabinda, but maybe it's like you said, hey, we solidify the right guard position, or you know, hopefully Frank gets healthy, because I really don't think that the second half woes of the running game, I don't think it would have been much different if TJ Hockenson was here, right? Like I don't think anybody's suggesting that, because what did he do when he went to Minnesota? He
proceeded about wide 80% of the time.
Right. Like he proceeded to go out there and he proceeded to have one, two, three, four games with double digit targets in an offense that features Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook. Like the guy went out there to catch footballs. He didn't go out there to block.
Yep.
So yeah.
I think that's ultimately what it is too, is like it's this offense puts more on the tight end blocking.
Yeah. And you could tell that they weren't completely happy with that. By the amount of times they started using that six offensive lineman towards the end of the year, I feel like it increased a little bit as the season went on. So, I mean, maybe that's an area you can upgrade instead, is instead of using Dan Skipper out there. And you know, it was a big season for Dan Skipper, even though he wasn't great. He hit a lot of milestones, but I think you can upgrade there too. So don't throw out an offensive tackle as a day two or day three pick, because I think the Lions need some depth there.
Oh my gosh, we're talking about the Lions drafting for depth.
Amazing, what are we doing? I know.
Progress.
Crazy zone. Well, what's not crazy is that we're done. This is the end of the Pride of Detroit POD cast for this week. We'll be back next week with more fascinating news, conversations where we yell at each other, and all the rest. So make sure to be subscribed. Mailbag podcast is coming as well. And scraps this week. Promise you the scraps this week if I'm not in a hospital for my coughing, which I should not be, but this is week three of it. So until then, for myself, for Jeremy Reisman, for Ryan Matthews, we'll see you Starside.
That was a lot better.
Yeah, you didn't like the other one. Pride of Detroit podcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. It's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. That's right, Righteous Felon Jerky and meat sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park. Each 2-ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein, and each stick has 8 grams of protein. Trust me, if it's good enough for the Lions, it's gonna be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced all-natural Black Angus beef, and they pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offerings. Go to righteousfelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout to get 15% off your order. That's promo code POD15 at righteousfelon.com.